Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.
Now at Menards, save big money on everything for your next project. With the largest selection of concrete and mortar in stock, we have the right mix specially formulated for your project. View our entire selection of concrete and mortar mixes online or in-store and save big money. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Monday, the 5th of July, 2021. On the podcast today, Paul Cuff, co-CEO of XPS Pensions, discusses some of the highlights from their final results and strategy going forward. Also, Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talks about Bidstack, Mode Global Holdings, and British Honey Company. Plus, as always, at the end of the podcast, I have two lists for you. The top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most read RNSs too. You can check out both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk on the front page there, and you can also see lots of content. There's an article from Fran there on Blencow Resources. There's one there on Bellascura. There's one on Dev Clever. There's another there on Alba Minerals. Plus, oh, there's one on Tech Capital. And a COVID-19 index. Biggest riser there, N4 Pharma, up 15% to 9.4 pence. Our biggest faller is Biotrol, down 5.2% to 6.16. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Paul Cuff, Co-Chief Executive Officer of XPS Pensions Group. That's XPS ticker. Paul, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, hi there. Thanks. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, it was nice to get you on the podcast. We've not had you on before, and it was nice to get a new company on so investors can learn about your story and the potential. So before we start and get a bit more specific on the questioning, can you just give us an overview of what XPS is all about, please?
Yeah, sure. So we do everything related to workplace pensions in the UK. We help companies and pension scheme trustees to run pension schemes, and we do everything, all of the advisory work about how to make them tick and make them produce great outcomes for the members of those schemes. We do all the administration of those pension schemes as well, all the nuts and bolts to make these pension schemes run really, really well.
Excellent stuff. Okay, and you've just reported full year results. This is for the year ending the 31st of March recently. Can you take us through some of the highlights there, Paul?
Yeah, so we had a very strong year. I mean, the pandemic was hard for everybody, wasn't it? But we're extremely proud of the way our staff responded and the way they looked after each other and our clients. And remarkably, we actually grew our revenues during the pandemic. Revenue growth was 7% for the group for the year ended 31 March of this year. And almost all of that was organic growth. So that was a terrific outcome. There was, we provide essential services that people need come rain or shine. And the results that we produced, I mean, they are, despite the pandemic, certainly not in any sense because of it, but it just showed the resilience, really, of the business model, that there was good demand across all of our divisions throughout the year, even against that really challenging backdrop. In terms of other highlights, our adjusted EBITDA was up 5% year on year, incredibly strong cash conversion of 113% in the year. We do generate a lot of cash in the activities that we do, so that enabled us to reduce our leverage a little bit over the year, and we closed at about 1.75 times leverage. And that all fed through ultimately to strong performance on our earnings per share basis, And actually, we're increasing our dividend very slightly. So I know we're a pretty unusual company in these times, but we increased our dividend by 2% on the prior year as well.
It sounds all good. I mean, you mentioned the strong performance across the group. Can you, go into a bit more detail on what you do exactly?
Yeah, so I mean, we have two core divisions. We do a few other things, but at our heart, we have an advisory business, and the advisory business employs a lot of very smart people who are typically actuaries or investment consultants, and their job, in plain English, is effectively to make sure that a pension scheme has enough money in it to pay all the benefits out to people in the long run. And if you think of some of the more dramatic sagas, things like Philip Green and BHS, or the corporate collapse of Carillion, which left a pension scheme high and dry, a lot of our business is helping defined benefit pension schemes to make sure they don't end up in those difficult, challenging situations. And it isn't always quite as dramatic as that. There's a huge amount of compliance work that we need to do year in, year out, every year, to say come rain or shine. And our actuaries and investment consultants have a lot of financial modelling and things that they need to do to help keep these pension schemes on the straight and narrow and to comply with all the regulations that there are around them. Now, on the other side, in administration, we do the really human stuff. And again, in the plainest English, that's making sure we just pay the right pensions to the right people at the right time. And we track people through all of their lives. We have databases and IT systems, calculation systems, etc., online systems for members to be able to self-serve. But literally, we answer the phone to members of pension schemes that have queries about the way it all works and what they can expect in the long term. We do the administration for about 1 million people in pension schemes in the UK. A lot of them, again, in defined benefit pension schemes, but we also do a lot of work in defined contribution as well.
Excellent stuff. And I've noticed the word recurring being mentioned as in revenues. Take us into a bit of that, if you could.
Yeah, I mean, again, because so much of what we do, we have to do every year. There are some analogies to what a sort of company auditor has to do every year. They have to go through certain processes and sign certain things off. And we do all of the regulatory filings, et cetera, for pension schemes year in, year out. And of course, these pension schemes are going to be here for 30, 40 years into the future. Although defined benefit schemes are now typically not used to provide ongoing pension provision to people, all the promises that have been made have to be kept and honoured. And actually, under half the people in these schemes have even reached their own retirement date yet, and many of them will live for many, many years beyond that. So we're providing these kind of core repeat services, whether that's doing the pension scheme's annual returns and accounts and tax filings, whether it's the ongoing administration, which just never stops day in, day out, dealing with the members, sending them regular updates about what's going on, etc. All of this stuff just has to happen all of the time. All of the regular financial health checks or ongoing reviews of the investment strategy that a pension scheme might get might be taking. You have no choice but to keep going and keep doing this all the time. I mean, a statistic for you is probably about 90% of our revenue at the start of a year is visible to us, as we'll be repeating what we did in the prior year. And the additional 10% then typically comes from maybe regulatory change around us or maybe corporate activity, or just actually doing discretionary things to try to make the pension scheme more safe and more secure. And we're quite busy on all of that. But yeah, an awful lot of what we do, we have a lot of visibility about way, way in advance.
Yeah, absolutely. I imagine, to non-experts, it must be a minefield. And you talk about, regulatory changes and it creating opportunities. Can you tell us more about that, please?
Yeah, so, I mean, we serve a very important societal purpose, really. We're the good people that are trying to get the very best possible outcomes that we can for these pension schemes. And, of course, lots of defined benefit schemes are in a little bit of financial difficulty, are in deficit, and some of their employers in the pandemic are struggling a little bit. But yeah, the wave of regulatory change at the moment is to try to beef up the protection that these pension schemes have, by and large. And it's about the balance of interest. But, it's about companies not pleading poverty to the pension scheme and saying we can't put any more money in, but then still paying big dividends to shareholders and so on. That sort of stuff is challenging and arguably not really quite right, not quite fair. So there's a lot of regulation coming through the system to balance all that up. And all of our clients will need help in responding to that. We mostly help the trustees of pension schemes, who are there to try to make sure the schemes are all right. And they need to negotiate with their corporate sponsors about the way it's all going to work. But there's a huge amount of regulation like that. Then there's also a lot of kind of quite techie stuff going on as well. There's something called GMP equalization. And I shan't trouble your listeners with what GMP equalization is in any detail at all. But essentially, a lot of pension schemes have not quite treated men and women equally for the last 20, 30 years in respect of a tiny little bit of the benefit that people get. But it's important. And a recent court case has ruled that that's not okay. Actually, we are going to need to rectify that both going forward, and we're also going to need to potentially go back 20, 30 years and true up the differences in the way that people were treated. And you know, that is an enormous project to do for any given client. Probably about 90% of pension schemes in the UK are affected. So not just us, but our competitors too. We have a sort of fairly substantial wall of work to get through to try to fix problems like that in schemes. And again, it's not really discretionary. All of our clients have to do that, and we're here to be pragmatic and helpful, but you know, it's a lot of work for us to get through to help them that we'll be paid to do. So you know, I could go on. There's the way pension schemes respond to climate change, there's pressure on general governance standards across our industry, and all of this is just work that's good for us. We aren't the ones that are regulated, but our clients are, and it creates a lot of demand for our services.
Yeah, well, it just seems like a massive growth driver, these regulatory changes. Is it the main growth driver?
It's not the only one. Of course, that's all on the clients we've already got. We've got a great opportunity to win clients from our competitors as well. We are unique. We're the largest independent pensions consulting and admin firm in the UK. We're the only listed business in the UK that specialises in this market. We compete against a variety of firms, but our biggest competitors are global multinationals that do all sorts of other things. So in our industry, we have the big three of Willis Towers Watson, Mercer, of course, part of Marsh McLennan Group, and Aon. And you'll have heard of those giant organizations that are more famous really for being big global insurance brokers, but they do have big pensions practices in the UK as well. We're a differentiated alternative to that. We are very focused. I think we have a really strong combination of both scale. We are about 1,400 staff now in the UK, so we're a reasonably big business, and you can trust us with a pension scheme of any size. We've got many multi-billion pound pension schemes that we look after, but we're still personal and we're still agile, and we move very quickly in response to the world around us. We don't have any kind of competing priorities in other markets or what have you. And so we can create a platform with real excellence and a very tech-enabled but very personal service still that increasingly in our market we are finding is resonating. And we have picked up a number of big clients coming out of those big three multinationals. And indeed, we've picked up some good people along the way too. And that slowed down a little bit during the pandemic, in fairness. So the new business pipeline was a little bit more challenged as the world sort of hung on a little bit to what it's got, but it's increasingly coming back now, and we're seeing a lot of people in the outside world are very keen to talk to us about what it is that we can offer that's a bit different to some of those really big players in the market.
Yeah, yeah, and you've grown through, by the looks of it, M&A in the past. I mean, is there, you know, further potential there for consolidation?
Yeah, there is. It is a very fragmented market. I mean, next to us there are a number of smaller players in our market as well. A number of those tail off to a number of sort of owner-managed businesses and or non-core divisions of one or two other corporates that do dabble a little bit in what we do. And in the last couple of years, we have acquired three businesses that have been what we would call bolt-ons, nice small little deals, but they're a real core part of our story to grow inorganically as well as organically, where there are businesses out there that we can pick up and provide a very good home to and potentially improve and cross-sell services into the client base of those businesses. Or indeed, sometimes those businesses equally bring a little bit of magic dust for us too to bring across our client base. And I do think it will be a core part of our story that we likely will be an agent of consolidation and drive things in that way through the market around us.
Good stuff. Okay, well, every day on the podcast, Paul, I highlight the top five most followed companies. And to get on that list, of course, people have to hit that follow button on your page. So could you give us three quick reasons in summary why someone should hit that follow button on your page, then add XPS to their watch list, please?
Yeah, so let me have a go at it. So, I mean, I think the recurring revenue stream, the sort of bulletproof nature of our core business has absolutely come to the fore. And to grow our business and even increase our dividend against the backdrop of the pandemic is something we're very proud of. And that really does show that resilience that we have. Our ability then to grow would be point two. We have so much regulatory change around us and demand for our services. There's an awful lot to do on our clients. And then that focus on that market, the ability to take other people's clients, which we've proven in the last 12 to 18 months, is again a source of great excitement for us, and the M&A opportunity I outlined. Probably the last one is something we haven't touched on so much so far, but just our culture. We are a people-led organization. We won the Gold Award last year at the UK Business Culture Awards, the overall winners of an event where there were 90 firms shortlisted across all sorts of categories. We won ours, which was about our values-led culture and our response to the pandemic. By the way, we looked after our people, and we were exceptionally proud of that. And I think we provide an important service into society. We're a very values-led organisation. We have a really positive difference to make to the world. And with a happy, engaged workforce after being looked after so well during the pandemic, we're incredibly well-placed, I think, to take advantage of all the other opportunities that we've just been having a good chat about.
Excellent stuff, Paul. It's good to chat to you. And hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Very good. Thank you very much. Nice to talk to you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. You're Al.
Oh, very good. Thanks, Jess. How are you, sir?
Not too bad. You enjoy the football on the weekend?
Oh, wasn't it fantastic? But one never wants to get too excited about England in these in tournaments like this. But I have to say, what I liked is they changed it around completely. Jack Grealish didn't get a look in, so we had all this talent on the bench, which didn't play. And we beat them 4-0, and we've still got a clean sheet. And, that's really quite something to get to this stage of a tournament without conceding any goals. So, Denmark on Wednesday night, that's going to be a tough test, but they're a good side. And obviously with what happened to Christian Eriksen, the team, have that extra motivation. But, if we can play defensively against the Danes, then we stand a very good chance to get into the final.
Yeah, absolutely. And, it's looking good. I was impressed, actually, with the first goal and... I thought they could do with another one here before half time, and then straight away in the second half they had another one. They're all close, good, and let's be honest, Ukraine was struggling to come back from one goal, weren't they? Let alone two. That's, I thought two is nail in the coffin. That's it. And then there's another one. I thought, wow, that is, and then another one.
Ukraine had done really well to get so far, and great team spirit, and obviously managed by Andrei Shevchenko, who's a legendary striker in his own right. But I think for the first time ever, we just have such strength and depth in the team. And the great thing is they're all really young players too. They're all youngsters, and they've got loads of energy, loads of enthusiasm. They don't have the legacy millstone hanging around their neck of getting knocked out on penalties and all the rest of it. I think it's quite telling that Gareth Southgate actually commented on that and said, we want to bring it home and put the ghost of the penalties to rest, really. On the strength of what I've seen, I think he can do it.
They can do it, because it's all about mental attitude now and how much they want it. That's what it's supposed to do, isn't it, really?
Oh, they want it. They want it a lot. Yeah. They really do. Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about stocks. What's the first one off the rank there, Cab?
First one off the rank. Okay, well... this is a company that I think need to improve their communications, and I've said this before. And the CEO, I think, has spoken lots in the past about where he's taking the company, but he communicates relatively rarely nowadays. Company is Bidstack, and of course, as holders will know and fans will know, the company got the company raised some more money last week, and it raised. Just under 11 million at 2p a share, and of course that was a huge discount. And I've been a fan of Bidstack all the way through, but I think the way they've handled their comps lately has been awful. But nonetheless, the technology is still there. They have a lot of support in their advisory board. A lady called Catherine Hayes, co-founder and former chief ops officer at Massive Inc., joined as strategic advisor, and she's been a long-term supporter of Bidstack. So she's very much a part of the team there now. And of course, a little earlier in the year, the CEO of Fnatic, an artificial intelligence company, Glenn Calvert, stepped up from the advisory board to join the board as an non-exec director. And the chief ops officer, Lisa House, also joined the board too. So there is a sense that Bidstack are very much moving in the right direction. Of course, James Draper is at the he's still the CEO in place. Of course, the Bidstack are engaged in ad placement within games, and we all know the size of the gaming market. It's absolutely enormous, estimated to be some 260 billion by 2025, and it's growing rapidly at a rapid rate of knots, about 15% a year at present. And they've Bidstack have developed a proprietary solution that has been tested and has ROI data and a dashboard in place, so advertisers can see what return they're getting from advertising in games. So, of course, if you're playing a football game or a racing game, you see the ads as you race around, but Bidstack serves live ads to those ad points. And, of course, depending on your profile, who you are, what you're interested in, so you'll see the ads accordingly. So it's a huge opportunity. All of the major agencies are interested in getting engaged. There are other players in the market, and some have said that Bidstack could be beaten to market by the likes of Anzu and others. But I still hold with my original view that the amount of people on the board and on the advisory board of Bidstack, I think, indicates to me that the market leading tech is still very much with this company. The problem they've had, as I said, is comms, and also the fact that promises were made by the CEO in terms of revenues, which weren't achieved. Nonetheless, they delivered full year results ahead of expectations last year. This raise, I think, was well flagged, and it's been talked about on bulletin boards. They've raised 11 million at 2p. Institutional and raised 9.7 million, and directors and other investors subscribed for 1.1 million. So all of the board have been involved in this fundraising. And of course, what they have to do now is deliver. They have to engage with the advertisers and get the revenues in. The broker Cenkos put out a note on the company, and there are estimates of when the company will reach break even, varying from between 2023 to 2024. So they've still got a long way to go, but nonetheless, if the likes of Catherine Hayes and the other people on the board can help to get Bidstack to where it needs to be, then I think it could arrive sooner than that. Nonetheless, work to do. The company is now fully funded and should be fully funded through to break even. But it's now down to the companies to really start communicating the progress with the marketplace, and we'll go from here. Either way, I did sell out, but I bought back in at around 2p, so I'm happy to support the company at this level, and hopefully we will see some returns before the end of this year.
Thing is, of course, experienced board members. Let's start the start here. I've always liked the era they're in. Gaming is, it's just growing and growing. Like you say, it's getting bigger and bigger. And any way to monetize that more is going to help. And having tech like this is good. And having an experienced board, of course, is going to help. But as yet, it's beyond proof of concept, because there's revenue coming in. But that has to grow a lot. It has to grow a lot to prove it. Because there's more competition coming in the market right now. And it just, that demand needs to be there. And that demand needs to manifest itself in revenue, massive revenue growth, because we're now, how many years has it been on the market? And this revenue originally was promised at the start. And it didn't materialize.
It was.
So, do you know what? Like I said, it's in a really hot area. I wish they do get it going. And, because I was very, very bullish about this company. But they've fallen a couple of hurdles. They missed lots of targets, and it's a pity. Look at that for a hype cycle. Wow, that's when I got in at the start. The runabouts of five, 6 pence, and that went up to 40 odd pence, and then they missed the revenue targets. I thought, oh, and now we're sitting on a 80 million pound company with little revenue, so I just got out. And I got a lot of people said, oh, you ramped that. I said, well, no, I was very promotional about it. I was very keen on it. I was very optimistic on it. But then it didn't come in with the revenue. So when the story changes like that, you have to get out. You know, if it's not supported fundamentally, there's two types of rises. I keep talking about this all the time in share prices. One is based on news. That's hope, hype, potential. And that's not sustainable. And then one is based on fundamentals, you know, which is revenue and profits. That's sustainable. They've had the hope, hype, potential rise. Now it's come back down. All the hype's gone out of it. Now they have to start generating that sustained rise backed by fundamentals. And if they can't do that, it's just going to pop and drop all the time. Because, I mean, do they have enough cash? Because we are talking about now a company that's valued at, 11 times sales, which is not cheap.
No. Well, it's they've raised more than their market cap. The market cap's now 8.4 million. So, I mean, it's gone way down from the original estimate. But obviously...
Well, no, they're a 20 million market cap company now, so with the fund, so with new shares issues. 20 million market cap. They're based on their previous fundamentals, they are... 11 times revenue, pretty much. They made a loss of over 6 million. You know, so they're burning cash still. I mean, that's got to come down by a heck of a lot to get to profitability, even by, 2023. We'll have enough cash by then. Obviously, cash will be coming down, hopefully. But is this enough runway, you know? If they get to profitability, have they got enough runway here? That's, as an investor, that's what I'd be asking. Have they got enough runway here? Of course, there will probably rises on news. There'll be pops on news. Is it sustainable? I don't know. But people are going on this level or average down. I fully expect to see some good rallies, some good pops here. But will it be followed by drops? That's the trouble. You know, until they can generate revenue, it's not sustainable.
No, I agree. This is what they have to do. But I think it is encouraging that they've raised, compared to market cap, they've raised more than their market cap in funding. That's indicative of where the investors think they are, and obviously their chances of success. So,
yeah, but you have to measure that. That was a 33% discount or 30% discount, and that's a heck of a lot of shares now of dilution there for existing shareholders. So the share price has gone down, the market cap has gone up, and yet their revenue sits at, was it 7 times revenue? What was the last? Was it 1.6 they turned over? What did they turn over for the year?
Yes, it was just going back to my notes.
1.7. Oh, in fact, 1.7.
1.7 million up from 140k previously. They had cash of 2.7 million, but obviously not enough to get through. Yeah, and they've now pumped that up. But as I said,
it's 11 times revenue. That's not cheap. You know, if you're looking at valuations of companies, that's not cheap. When I'm looking at a new company to invest in, I'm looking at a company that's heading towards profitability, that's got it there within, and they have the cash to get there, and they are within 2 times revenue. This is 11 times revenue. So, like I said, it'll pop. It'll pop on hype, but they need to generate that cash now. They really do.
Yeah, I think they now need to start delivering and give investors some visibility. And I think if there's visibility and they are delivering, because they've had enough time to develop the technology, it's now the proof of concept time is over. Now they've got to deliver, and they've got to get they've got to sign the deals with the advertisers and get the platform out there, because each stage of validity has gone through. They've passed with flying colours. And it is good tech. So, and the fact they've still raised more than their market cap is encouraging. It shows there's a lot of appetite for the stock out there. Of course, they've got the association with esports too, with through Venatus. So there's that element to it. And I think there's certainly enough to back it, but it's got to be, we've got to see results from here on in.
What are the Cenkos notes? You got it there? What's the revenue projections on that?
Just a second, I've got to go back and find that. The Cenkos note was a bit woolly, to be fair. There wasn't a great deal of guidance. Cenkos said the cash raise should be enough to get the company to the end of 2023. And they reckon they'll end next year with about 3.2 million cash. So, they've got to deliver, but they've now got some breathing space. And I think you know, if they can really start to deliver early deals on this and start to, we start to see some deals coming in that's going to take that revenue up to sort of 3, 4, 5 million a year, as James was projecting a couple of years ago, then I think the market will be encouraged, and I think we'll see some decent movement in the share price. But it's still, you know, there's still an awful long way to go. So the note isn't, there's a lot of detail in there, but very little commitment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Well, I genuinely hope they do it because it's, like I said, good idea, good tech. We're just beyond proof of concept there, but it's not proof of commercial concept yet because we haven't, like I said, got that cash burn's ever come down a hell of a lot. They burned 6.7 million last year, pretty much. So, you know, that's in a year. They raised, what, 11? So it's going at cash burn, it's a year and a half. So hopefully that'll come down by a heck of a lot. But there we are. We'll see. You know, time will tell. So that's bids. What's next, Al?
Mode Global Holdings PLC. Mode. MOD is the epic code. I've actually got a Mode app, and I think it's very good. And I've got some Bitcoin in there, and there is a Bitcoin jar in there that you could put your Bitcoin into, and you earn interest, which is you know, which I think Coinbase also offer nowadays too. But Mode was launched in October last year, came to market, and the shares were going to market, and the shares are more or less, well, slightly under where they came to market at. But that's, you know, given the ups and downs in the tech world, and also the ups and downs in Bitcoin, of course, I think that's a fairly robust performance considering. So Mode are all about payment and loyalty solutions to industry, whilst also providing a very advanced platform on which to buy and sell Bitcoin. So they developed a super app. They pay interest in Bitcoin, of course, as I've mentioned already. It's a seamless process. And what I like is that if I want to put some money into go and buy Bitcoin, I can add cash in my account, and it opens up my Halifax app automatically. Out the money comes straight into the account, and it's all instant. And this is how technology should work. It's integrating, you know, conventional banking. Well, it's open banking and open finance. It's integrating conventional banking systems with the crypto marketplace. In October, Mode announced it had adopted Bitcoin as its treasury reserve assets. So up to 10% of its cash reserves are held in Bitcoin. Through each month, Mode have delivered an update on the amount of customers using the app and buying the app, and that has delivered growth exponentially. They appointed a fellow called Ryan Moore in May as the new chief executive. He's formerly worked for Baker Hughes and has a background in energy technology, and of course Jonathan Rowland is the CEO, is now the chairman. He was Jonathan was involved in the first ever in the cloud bank hosted on MS or Microsoft Azure some years ago. That bank was called Redwood for those that use it or have can think that far back. Mode have focused predominantly today on developing technology payment solutions with technology providers. They've been working to develop this throughout the first half of 2020. June the 14th, they announced a partnership with THG PLC, where it's launched its payment solution across 30 or more THG brands, including MyProtein and Look Fantastic. What it means is UK customers can use Bitcoin to pay for products on across these brands. I mentioned how seamless and instant this process was. You can pay for it instantly, and also if there are rewards that come in from these making these purchases, those rewards are come back to you in Bitcoin. So again, further integration of crypto into the mainstream. On the back of this, a few days later, the company announced it had secured the Electronic Money Institution License, EMI, and the AMLD5 FCA license. which basically gives the company the platform it needs. And Ryan Moore said that throughout the past year they spent the time building their business around security and compliance. And as a result of that, those awards, it was now one of a handful of UK companies to be granted both these awards, and the only one listed on the LSE main market. So behind the scenes, there is a platform there that is fully compliant for all requirements, both on the EMI front and also the FCA front, to take this forward and to scale up the work with commercial partners. And also at the end of June, the company announced it had launched a payments and this payments and reward platform on Android, which meant of course frictionless payments would now be facilitated on all Android platforms with Bitcoin cashback. So back to the shares again. The company's currently got a market cap of 39 million. Shares currently trading 43p, have traded as high as 85p, and that was around the beginning of the year, of course, with the rush into Bitcoin and the huge amounts of volume being traded there. Lear low 33p, so I think it's a good level to get engaged with this company. It's making good progress, and I think it's got great opportunities to scale up commercially with commercial partners in the coming months, and it's a great British company, and I think one that's well worth backing.
Yeah, no, I hope it does well. I know some of the guys in my investment club hold it. Now, I've not really gone into it and not really researched it. It's a bit too big for initial investment for me. But explain to me, because the things I don't understand here. So what's the difference between this, for example? I know there's a lot of apps out there. That's the problem I have. I don't know what the competition is out there, and I know it takes a lot to market these kind of things, but it's fintech, could be quite hot. So what's the difference between this? I've got a Coinbase app, all right? I've got some Bitcoin.
I've got Coinbase too.
Ethereum, and I've got Cardano in that, and I can transfer money quite easily with that. What's the difference in this then, and say, for example, Coinbase? And Coinbase, obviously, it's a crypto exchange. But I can also buy crypto that pay interest. So what's the difference between this then and that?
The difference with Mo predominantly is that it's pushing its solutions into the commercial sector, and I'm sure Coinbase are doing the same. But it was set up to provide payment solutions and to integrate Bitcoin and cryptocurrency seamlessly via the open finance and open banking initiatives. And yes, I mean, there are numerous apps around that provide this. I just happen to like the cut of this company's jib, and having downloaded and used the app, I've got a Coinbase app too, and I've used that, and that's pretty seamless. But the Mob one just seems to work very well too.
So what I use this for? If I got Coinbase, what do you use it for? What would I use it for?
Well, I've got other crypto in my Coinbase account, but with Mode, of course, it's just Bitcoin at present, and I use the Bitcoin jar, so the Bitcoin I bought in there, I transfer it to the jar, and I earn interest on it every week. So it's a nominal amount of interest, but that was a factor that attracted me to it. And also, I think, as with all these apps, it's functionality, isn't it? It's just how well does it work and how seamless is it? And I just like the way it was absolutely seamless with my app, in that it would open my banking app. I'd authorize it with a fingerprint or whatever, and then it would go straight in. It was just a seamless process. And I think with all these apps, the world's very fast moving. You just want to do things quickly and not have to faff about with them to log in here and then press that button again. And I have in the past found Coinbase quite clunky in that regard. But as soon as I started using Mode, I thought, no, that's great. That's really quick, slick, seamless, and that's what you want. You don't want to have to think about things. You just want it done, and that's what the app does.
Marvelous. To me, it's just, it'd be interesting to see what the figures are like, because at the end of the day, it's how many customers they're getting through the door, isn't it? That's what it comes down to.
It is, yeah. What I mean, in June, of course,
how many sign-ups, basically.
Yeah, well, in June, of course, they announced their interims, a six-monthly loss of 1.9 million, loss of 1.2 million previously.
Yeah, they haven't been listed for long, though, have they? I mean, we don't see sort of a 12 months, yeah, of trading, yeah, listed trading, because as yet, they're still new. So it's interesting to see where they are. It's hard to make any judgment on it yet because, like I said, they haven't been around that long, you know.
No, I think, but I think the team are very visible, you know, across social media. They're doing an awful lot and getting out there, and the pace of progress, you know, with the developments, with the joint ventures, you know, the THG joint venture was a real landmark development. You know, THG worked with many brands out there, and this is the first of many deals I think we'll see. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see, as you say, you know, full year results, take into account some of the commercial deals that they're doing. And you know, looking at the upswing that we hope for there, to see if they can hit the targets that they've set out for the year.
Yeah. No, interesting. It's still early days, and of course in the Bitcoin space, and interesting to see. I mean, it's, you know, it's like I said, it's not for a fintech app like this. 40 million is not dear really, because they can really rally. But yeah, I'm interested to see you know, how the interims come out, see what they're like, you know, see what the results are, how people are signing up and stuff. But yeah, interesting space. No, it looks quite slick, doesn't it? I mean, you know, I haven't used it, but it looks like it's slick. Cool. Okay, that's Mode.
It is, yeah. I think they say it's just the functionality. You know, you want something that works quickly and seamlessly, and the app does that. First time I used it, I thought, oh, that's really cool. You know, I like that. And so, you know, if I want to buy Bitcoin on the dip, I can just go in, bang, 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 and it's done. And that's what that's how you want an app to work.
Yeah, no, I know. No, absolutely. It's kind of worked like that. And but like I said, as me, I've got Coinbase. And also, someone's talked to me about Revolut, which have you ever looked at Revolut?
Revolut,
an app that's supposed to be very good. But I installed it. I haven't used it at all. I don't want to spoil, really. I mean, I've got my apps. The ones I use, I'm happy with. Like I said, you know, I've got a banking app and Coinbase app. And the other ones I've used, I haven't really, you know, done anything with. But I've also done, in fact, I get Dan Lane on the podcast on a weekly basis. He's from Free Trade, and I've downloaded their app. It's very good, actually. You can trade US stocks very easily. But there's so many apps up there. As I say, there's so much to choose from. That's the trouble. You know, for these companies, yeah, they have to cut through, don't they? There's so many out there. You don't know one,
yeah,
you know, they
yeah,
have to just yep, cut through and what's the point of difference to the consumer. Cool. All right. What's next, Al?
Okay, we've got British Honey Company again, BHC, and this, of course, is the Aquis-listed company that it's the UK's leading independent honey producer, and shares have traded pretty flat on the year. You've had the odd blip with news, but again, it's not flatlining at all. I mean, there's an awful lot going on, an awful lot has happened, but the company's got a market cap of 19 million. Shares are traded as high as 122. No, I'm just trying to get my mouse on the chart. 122p and as low as 116p, and that's pretty well where we are at present. So, as I say, British Honey Company, the leading independent honey producer in the UK, producing some 7 million tonnes per annum. But it's diversified into spirit brands and distilleries. It launched the Keeper Spirit brand, where a lot of its drinks were infused with honey, selling these through the likes of Waitrose, Majestic, Not on the High Street, Amazon, and so on. And it's also spent a lot of money developing its own bespoke IT platform that's, to provide end-to-end support across the entire business, and also full traceability through for each bottle and each jar of produce that's sold. It produces its own gin and also alcoholic sparkling water, which I find quite fascinating. I'm going to try that at some point.
Sparkling water, wow.
Yeah. Seltzer alcoholic sparkling water.
I don't like sparkling water. I always find it really odd because it doesn't taste anything. I don't mind if it tastes something. But does it flavoured?
I think so. Yeah, it's infused with honey. So this is I find the idea quite appealing, actually. So might try some of that. But they've gone through the year a series of joint ventures. The company also operates on the Tusmore Park Estate in Oxfordshire, and a sort of joint venture to operate a distillery on that. Earlier in the year, joint venture with or an agreement with English Heritage to sell its products at over 400 monuments. And of course, that was badly hit by COVID. But as things start to open up again, that's all changing. Really started to make progress this year when in February it raised 4.25 million in a placing. Part of that was to acquire Union Distillers for some 8 million. So that placing took place at £1.10 or 110 pence also included a secured loan note from its largest shareholder. That acquisition is expected to be transformational for the company. The chief executive said in the latest announcement that the business is now well placed commercially and financially for further growth in 2021 and beyond. The company appointed a fellow called Philip Ely back in April as the new CFO, and combined forward order book of 4 million. That seems to be on the up the whole time. So it's early days with Betty and the Unis Distillers acquisition, but it's expected that that's going to deliver a transformational change in terms of revenue and opportunities going forward. So the share price really reflects the financial performance to date. But I think once we get some numbers out from the current period that includes the revenues from the Union Distillers acquisition, I think we're going to see some significant changes both in the numbers and also in the share price performance for the company too.
Do you know what? I've been on their website, mesmerised by some of the artworks. Lovely. The drinks look apt. I don't like gin, but the way they've had photographs taken of them and displayed them look very welcoming, you know. And there's some of the pictures there, lovely, very clean, very well done. And that says a lot, I think, by the company. When they got their two birds, watermelon gin. They got a picture of the bottle, very arty, sort of watermelon, sort of three-quarter chopped off or quarter chopped off top, full of gin and ice and lemon and some leaves there. Looks very nice.
Yeah, it does. When I was talking about this company before, they've carved out a niche in themselves. They have a very unique and individual way of going about what they do, and you've just reflected that in your comments. You know, if you go to the website, their products are very individual, but also with these acquisitions, the brands are becoming more and more diversified, but they still have that stamp of individuality on them. Also worth mentioning as well, they did a share swap with a company called List Distilleries in Florida, where British Honey Company took on 10% of List Distillery, and List in return took on 4.5% of British Honey Company. So that's a really innovative way of working together, but also it gives of course a springboard into the US market as well. So really well run, really well managed company, and I think it's got a great future. And as I say, I mean, shares haven't really moved, so I think they still offer great value where they are at the moment, but I do see some real growth coming from this Union Distillers acquisition.
What did you say the market cap was?
Market cap is 19 million. Just over 19 million, okay. You know, which for all of that, if you look at the website and look at the brands and the products they use, and also their distribution network, you know, they've got a great distribution channels, you know, Waitrose and Majestic Wine and others. You know, there's an awful lot to come.
Yeah. So 19 million, they did up to 9 months, wasn't it? 9 months. All right. Okay. So 9 months ended the 31st of December, was 1.5 million revenue, made a loss of 1.2. It's an increase from last year, more than double, but I assume that through acquisition as well, is it not just organic? But it's not cheap, but the drinks look very tempting, even though I don't drink gin and some of that.
I think when you look at a diversified portfolio, this is, you know, a company like this is a useful addition because they are carving out a niche for themselves, and they've got that unique position in the marketplace.
When everything comes from lockdown, anyway, their AGM should be quite good. Freebies on. Welcome. Marvellous. Yeah. Al, thanks for that. Anything else?
That's it, Jazz. That's it for me today.
Okay, we'll speak to you next week.
Speak to you next week.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Trellis Health PLC. It's non-mover at 70.5 pence. At four, Blue Star Capital, non-mover 0.15. At three, Avingtrans, up 3.4% to 4.55. At two, Biome Technologies, up 5% to 4.05, bouncing back from the sell-off last week. And at one, Bellascura, up 4.42% to 59 pence. Okay, it's time for the top five most read RNSs. Didn't see that many RNSs interest me today anyway. But at five, Canadian Overseas Petroleum, exercise of warrants and share issuance. At four, Amiga Holdings and Company. So these are boring RNSs. At three, UK Oil and Gas, successful placing and proposed open offer. At two, Abingdon Health, manufacturer agreement with BioPorto. And at one, Supply Acme Capital, notice of 2020 AGM. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loan subject to approval in available locations.